Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody, it's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. And boy, I didn't think I was going to make it in here just by the skin of my teeth. We were having a little bit of technical difficulties with connecting through my ISP, which is the reason I put in our chat room. Boy, that was close. Darn near lost a $400 handcart. A line from one of my favorite movies, Blazing Saddles. And I'm sorry, Miss Linda, that you have to suffer through the commercial. It's like commercial roulette when we get on the old BTR these days. I was actually on Skype earlier helping Miss Yola with her newly purchased e-cigarette paraphernalia, but I think we got her squared away. You know, I'm a lot like a mushroom, I guess. I stay in the dark on a lot of things, and so I really didn't get to see a lot of the news going on today. And quite honestly, do we really need to read or listen to all the various sundry news stories coming out every day to really comprehend the state of the union and the state of the world? My God, how wonderful it would be if we would return back to a constitutional government. As many of you know, or might know, if you've listened to me for any time, there's a couple of forums that I participate in, and one is very prevalent with atheists. And it just floors me. Many of them, I've learned, besides the fact that they're convinced that they're far more intelligent than the average Christian, which just clearly isn't true, but that's certainly their perception. One of the things I've noticed with a lot of these guys is they just don't have a solid grasp or understanding of the scriptures. And I suppose that is one reason why I see a tendency with these people to cherry pick specific verses from scripture, and they try to argue those verses. And I've explained to these folks that I simply refuse to argue the scriptures with another individual who claims that they don't believe in them and they don't believe in God. I am not going to be put in the position of placing the Word of God and the Holy Scriptures on trial. First of all, I don't believe that God really needs me to defend Him in any way, shape, or form. And I also don't believe that I would be able to do so in any way, shape, or form. It's not up to me to convince someone that God is real, that He exists, or He doesn't. That's one of the reasons why the Word was written down, so that men could search the Word, and women, don't want to leave anyone out, so we can search the Word, and actually, if we have the gift of the Holy Spirit within us, then discernment plays a large role. And it's just mind-boggling to me. Hey, FT, nice to have you in. It's mind-boggling to me how anyone can believe that they've read the entire Bible and come away with some of the concepts that they possess surrounding God and Christianity and the meaning and purpose of the entire Bible. The idea has been presented to me on numerous occasions that, and I'll paraphrase here, that the purpose of government and kings is to be God's representative and rule over men here on earth. So let's see if we can get that straight. People believe, and they believed in times of old, monarchies, right, that God appointed kings, monarchs, and governments to rule over man. But I think that these people that hold this belief have not read the same Bible that I have read, because it is fairly apparent to me that from beginning to end, the failing was not God. God's not the one that failed. It's man and our ability to understand and comprehend God and what he's telling us. I find it interesting that atheists, or those that claim to be atheists, want to blame God, a God they claim they don't believe in, for all the terrible things that they believe God has done to mankind. And from where I sit, it's kind of like when you're young and there's a hot stove in the kitchen and your mother says, no, don't. That's hot. Hot. If you touch it, it'll hurt. It'll burn you. And then, of course, you touch it and you're going to blame the stove. It's the stove's fault that you got burnt, not your own. You bear no responsibility. And even though you were warned, you touched it anyway. You didn't comprehend. You didn't understand what getting burnt meant. You didn't understand what hot was. You really didn't understand the consequences of your actions. You were warned, but you do it anyway, and then you blame the object of your pain. This is the thing that I see people do every day, and not just atheists. Let's not just try and lump everybody into one crowd here. Christians do it as well. And many times we do it without even realizing that we're doing it. And I apologize for those of you that did not realize that tonight you were coming into more of a sermon than anything else. But it, to me, for my own sanity, I have to clear this up, because I don't know, maybe some of you feel the same way that these other folks do. And if you do, if you believe that God has ordained kings to rule over men or governments to rule over men, then maybe we should have that discussion, because I believe that you're not reading the Bible that I'm reading. Or if you are reading the same Bible that I am, you're not understanding the words that are written in that book. Your comprehension level is off a little bit. And that's okay, and we can have that discussion. And I don't see having a discussion with believers as being placing the scriptures on trial. It's getting an understanding. One of the scriptures that has been oft repeated is Romans 13. And I've had numerous people tell me that in Romans 13, Paul is saying that all authority is ordained by God, and that's not at all what it says. And they completely skip the sentence in the paragraph prior to that that says that government or authority is not a terror to good works. Well, if authority is not a terror to good works, now, presumably, we know that Paul was speaking to the Christians in Rome at a time when Christians were being persecuted by a guy named Nero. So if we're to read Romans 13 in the ideology that many people put forth, that all authority, all government is ordained by God and therefore must be followed, obeyed, and behaved, then Paul is essentially telling the Christian standing before him that God has appointed Nero as Caesar over them, and they should bless God and thank him as Caesar, Nero, throws them to the lions. Well, I'm sorry, but I don't think that's what Paul was saying. I just don't believe that that's what he was preaching. I believe what he was telling them is that all just authority comes from God. And the fact, if you take the entire Bible up to that point, it is a demonstration, one generation after the other, that man is not fit and capable to govern other men. And the reason that man is not capable and fit to govern over other men is because man is, by his nature, a sinner. He is wicked and evil, and we will always descend into oppression and tyranny if we are given authority over our fellow man. You see, this is why God said the law is not sufficient. If you look to, you know, man has no grace, no justice in his heart. He has only his self-interests. And so when given just the letter of the law, without God's spirit and intention of the law as he's cast it on stone, so left only to our own devices as man, we read that law, we are going to interpret that law to best benefit our own agenda. Ladies and gentlemen, I put it to you that right now, to this day, from the very day that our country was founded under the Constitution until this very day, is an example of exactly what I'm talking about right now. You see, the Constitution was an attempt by men to place a framework around government that relied upon the consent of the governed and had specific goals and specific restrictions placed upon it so that it could not do what it currently does. How did that work out for us? It's worked out exactly the same way as every other rule of man on the face of the earth in known history. You see, when you leave governance to man or a group of men, they will twist and alter the spirit in which those words are given to suit their own agenda, to benefit themselves. They will manipulate the English language and the words written in stone until they mean exactly what they believe is most beneficial for their own means, their own end. It's a means to an end. Is this not the same story that's laid out in the Holy Bible from first page to last? God gave the rules. In the beginning, there was one rule. See that tree over there? Don't mess with it. Now, we can have a philosophical discussion and argument over whether or not it was an actual tree or whether the tree is just an allegorical representation of what it was God was telling them don't mess with. That's inconsequential for the point. The point is, God said don't and man did. And there were consequences to that action. But man was free to make that choice. And hence, that is the free will that we've spoken of before. So when you have the free will to make the choice to do or not to do, and you do, you can't then turn around and blame the consequences for your actions on God and say, well, why did you even make the system this way? If you knew I was going to do it anyway, you should have taken away the punishment. What a great life that would be, right? Where we could just do whatever we wanted and there were no consequences. And isn't that kind of what the progressive folks want, right? Is life without consequences, unless you work for a living and you want to have your own private property. You want to believe in personal property. Well, then, you see, there are consequences to those actions. So we can't, in my mind at least, separate the two. And the story today is no different than it was 2,000 years ago. And as long as we continue on the path that we are, it will continue to follow the same cycles. You can go back through history and look at every government that's been established by man, and every one of them has risen and fallen. Every one of them has failed, and every one of them will fail into the foreseeable future. Why? For all the reasons we've just discussed. But the simplest way to tell you the reason why they will all fail is man. and our sin nature. We are not fit to rule over others. And the very fact that when we try to rule over others, we descend into tyrannical oppression is the self-evident truth that the founders were talking about in our Declaration of Independence. They said all men are created equal because you see the one thing that every man has at his core is his own self-interest. His own self-interest. His own survival. And then the survival of his family. And then friends and other loved ones. It is the way we were made. That's why Christ said, you know, let him without sin cast the first stone. Or, pull the beam from your own eye before you try to pick at the speck of dust in your neighbor's eye. What was on our currency many, many years ago before we had the In God We Trust? Mind your business. That used to be on our currency, or our money, I should say. Don't know how many folks realize that. But it used to be embossed on our money and printed, mind your business. You see, we knew something back then that we seem to have forgotten again today. And that is, as long as every one of us is going about with one thing in mind, our own self-interest, and we recognize that we don't have the authority or the right to trespass on the self-interest of someone else without consequence of punishment. That's where we need to be, ladies and gentlemen. Our government was not designed to be an authoritarian rule of law. It was to be simple basic law, simple trespass, what was called the common law. And government was to be restrained into very, very narrowly defined segments of regulation. And it was never meant to regulate the behavior of an individual on an individual level or a collective on a collective level. It was meant to regulate commerce to make sure that nobody was gaming the system and getting a leg up or cheating his neighbor. It was designed to make sure that you weren't under threat of invasion from foreign forces or from the militia of another state. It was to make sure that states didn't impose taxation upon each other outside of their own jurisdiction. How in the hell could they do that? How could Louisiana tax Florida? That just was not acceptable. I mean, this is the basis, the foundational basis of our Constitution. And why people can't see that, and these people that want to deny that, okay, they get their panties in a wad because they hear things like the United States and the Constitution were founded on Christian principles, and they mistakenly believe that that comment or that phrase is somehow meant to imply that this is going to be some kind of a biblical theocracy. No, that was absolutely accounted for in that same Constitution, enshrined in that First Amendment, right? Now, a state could have a state religion. By the Constitution, the state of Georgia literally could have decreed that Georgia is going to be a Catholic state. Now, that doesn't mean that only Catholics can live in Georgia. That just means that the official religion of Georgia would be Catholicism. That doesn't mean that Georgia could deny Baptists the right or Muslims the right to worship within the confines of the state. It just simply says that Georgia is going to be guided primarily by the Catholic teachings, and of course, by their state constitution. Which, by the way, their state constitution existed prior to the formation of the federal government. But it just, it blows my mind that people can be so arrogantly ignorant of the reality of the situation. And they have such a hatred for all things God that they will reject even the idea that the principles on which this country were founded are Christian principles. That those principles are found in the Bible. Because they have this obtuse ideology, this backwards reading of the Bible, and believe that God has ordained for there to be monarchies and kings. Yes, in Samuel we find that indeed God does appoint a king, but it wasn't as if, you know, God woke up and said, I'm going to appoint you a king to rule over you. No. It was man that begged and begged, appoint us a king. And God even warned, he said, warn them that this king will be a tyrant. He'll take everything and he'll enslave them. Still, they wanted the king. And then when they got the king, they decried. And of course, the kings from that time forward, right? What do you think give rise to the monarchy and the claim of monarchy throughout Europe? Oh, they're ordained by God. They're going to go sit on the coronation stone and be crowned, and the bloodlines and all this crap. And that's what it is. It's crap. And the founders knew that. I'm going to bring in Mr. Robert Kaplan. Robert, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm lost for words.
Are you now? I don't believe that.
Yeah, well, I tell you, man, I don't know anymore. I just don't know no more, Ron. You're right. We fucking messed up. I'm guilty of it. I'm guilty.
We all are. We all are. None of us are perfect. Look, I spent my whole life growing up and having people tell me what something meant. Okay? I'm not trying to blame anybody, and I'm not trying to call anybody out. I'm just saying, my God, go back and read that book, because if you truly believe, like these other people tell me they believe, man, you need to go back and reread that thing, and read it as an entire work. Don't go and pluck little cherries, little gems out of there, when you don't even understand the total work. In and of itself.
When you say mind your business, that's all I've been doing is minding my business. And it's killing people.
Well, it's pretty damn difficult to do these days, isn't it? Because you look at the plethora of laws. My God, there is no way, I will posit to you, that in this day and age, there is no way to live an average, normal life in the United States of America without violating the law at least once a week.
I know.
They do not have any idea. They don't have any clue of how to reconcile all these various laws. You can't pay taxes, ladies and gentlemen. If you get up and you go to work, and your employer sends taxes in on your behalf to the federal government, you're a felon. You are in violation of federal law, and it's a felony offense.
Hmm. Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean they're going to prosecute you for it. Believe me, they won't. Because they'd rather have the money than admit that your actions are felonious. You're in violation of the USA Patriot Act. When you pay federal taxes, you're in violation of the Trading with the Enemies Act when you pay federal taxes. How can this be? Well, because you are giving financial aid and support to a government or an agency or an entity that provides material support for a terrorist organization. And this is nothing new. This government, your government, ladies and gentlemen, my government, our government, has been supplying aid and comfort to terrorist organizations since the end of World War II. In direct violation of the very laws that that same government has written that evidently do not apply to the government equally as they apply to us as citizens.
Yeah, we harbor a criminal. We'd be SOL if we harbored a criminal, right?
I mean, let's go back. Does anybody remember this name, Mujahideen?
Yeah.
Who are they? Who were they?
It's one of the Muslim terrorists, Mujahideen.
Well. But who were they fighting? They
were fighting the Iran-Contra. That's what it was with the Iran-Contra, wasn't it?
No. The Iran-Contra affair was we were running guns and money into the Iran-Contras to fight the Soviets through Afghanistan. The Contra deal was with drug money in South America. Being funneled up and through because, you see, that was an end around Congress because we all know, right, that any bill for appropriation of money has to go through Congress. Well, if you're selling dope, if you're getting dope out of the South America and you're selling it in the U.S. and taking that money and using it to buy weapons to supply the Mujahideen freedom fighters in Afghanistan to fight the Soviets, well, then there is no congressional oversight or approval required, now is there? And this, boys and girls, is how you end up with a $10,000 toilet seat and an $8,000 hammer. And this is why Ron Paul says all funds are fungible. Because they truly are. But I don't understand why people can't get this through their head. And it just blows my mind. And why we can't see the connection biblically to the founding of this country. My God, we've only got how many thousands of years of recorded history giving us all the same damned examples. You go all the way through the Bible, you see the same examples.
Well, Isaiah says that Damascus was going to be destroyed.
Okay, but well, hold on. Wait. You're right. When was Isaiah... What time frame is Isaiah talking about? During the Babylonian captivity or after?
I can't remember, but I saw it.
I can, because I can tell you. It was during the captivity of Babylon. And all throughout Isaiah, God is warning the Jews, if you don't change your ways, I'm going to utterly destroy you. While they're in captivity in Babylon, by the way. You've got to go all the way to Daniel, the book of Daniel. And where were they at? Who was the king of Babylon? Nebuchadnezzar, was that his name?
Nebuchadnezzar.
And isn't that who Daniel interpreted the video or the video? Isn't that who Daniel interpreted the vision for? Was King Nebuchadnezzar?
Yeah, he was a bastard, King Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay, so here we are, so we can agree now, because, you know, Daniel comes after Isaiah, right? Isaiah is full of warnings. You read through Isaiah, and it's warning after warning after warning after warning, and God's telling them the time of the Lord is coming. When it does, woe to you if you're not in compliance, because I'm going to bring the hammer down on you. I'm going to destroy you, I'm going to destroy everything. So then we fast forward to the book of Daniel, and in Daniel, Daniel gets a vision that he doesn't understand.
Mm.
And Gabriel,
it's all there.
Gabriel, the archangel Gabriel, comes down and he tells Daniel what that vision means. And what does he tell him? He says, 70 weeks are determined against your people. Not the Babylonians, not Damascus. Damascus, by the way, was destroyed back in the time frame. Go back and read your history. Okay? So
that was pretty interesting when I read that.
70 people or 70 weeks are determined against your people, the Jews, Israel. I don't want to call them Jews. I want to call them Israel because they were God's chosen, Israel. And then he tells him why. To put an end to the transgression. What transgression? The garden. Adam, the first disobedience.
Adam.
The first disobedience of God, right? And from Adam until Christ, did man? Is there a point in time where man was in God's graces and obeying and abiding all the law? Never.
Well,
not a single one. Not a single one. They were constantly in violation of the contract.
Adam was having sex with Eve, and that's what did it, man. It's
well, you go from the time of Adam until the time of Christ, and you point to me any time in that biblical history where mankind was in God's full grace and complying with the law. There's none.
I can understand why my father always told me that woman would always get me in trouble. I can understand it now. Are you there? Ron? Hello?
All right, everybody, and I think that should have me back in. We got voice. Anybody hear me? I'm calling in on the landline, so hopefully you guys can pick me up. Good deal. Hopefully it won't kill my landline. They're both on our cable, so through the same provider. And it looks like I've got Linda and Robert both in here. Yeah, sorry about that. And so you guys in?
Hello?
Yeah, there she is. Hey, Linda.
Okay. I didn't know if I was muted or unmuted. I never can tell, especially when you're going in and out of Skype. Going through the Bible is probably one of the smartest things we should do at this point because, you know, I mean, turning on the news is enough to make anyone want to just blow their brains out. It's not fun. I don't even know where to start with these people. Did you see that one in Baltimore where the gentleman was trying to speak and they arrested him?
Oh,
in
sure.
In a public forum.
And look,
this
you know,
is old
that
Soviet,
is...
dude. This is old Soviet Stalin. I'm telling you, this is not good.
And it's so damn common. That is so damn common when you don't bow down and kiss the ring. Oh, well, you're resisting arrest, and you're assaulting an officer, and, you know, 15 other things, and it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. They want you to be a coward. They want you to be afraid. They want you to be fearful of your government.
Yes, and what happened was at one point this lady, she was like probably, you know, approaching my age or somewhere in that vicinity, and she stood up and actually almost touched that stupid security guard. What she should have done was gone up to that school board head and said, get that security guard out of here and that man alone, and then everybody would have probably followed suit. That's what she should have done.
And you see, the thing is, and what I have a problem with,
is that the guy is wearing a shirt that says security.
He's a Reddit cop.
Well, but then he reaches inside of his shirt and pulls out a badge and flashes it at the guy.
Oh, my God.
So at this point, I have to say time out.
Checka. Yeah.
You're wearing a shirt that says security. Now you're showing me a badge. So which one are you at this point in time? Are you representing the city, state, or county that you work for as an officer? Or are you here moonlighting as a security guard? I got to ask that question.
Yeah,
hey, Ron,
you know, they go ahead.
Because a security guard does not have the power of arrest.
Yeah, the whole thing is ridiculous. Unless we have formed our own CHECA, which translates to secret police, that's what you're doing, Ron. And look around you. I mean, I saw a video today with General Boykin talking to some gentleman, it was an audio actually, on what they're doing to Christians in our own military. He said, first we had Clinton's Don't Ask, Don't Tell, everybody got along great. He says, now they've got the gays out of the closet and they're putting the Christians in the damn closet and they can't even speak. And then he went on to say that's exactly what happened in Russia and with the Catholic Church. And then people came out, that wall fell down, and then here comes all these Catholics and these people coming in and going, we thought the Catholic Church in Russia was dead. And they go, no, we were forced underground. We were forced to be silent. That's what they're trying to do here. Look what
well,
they're
certainly.
Doing to us.
And you see, this is what FT put up in the chat room. And then, Robert, I promise I'll let you get your point out. FT put up, you know, if you they'll just shoot you if you resist. Okay. Go back a few episodes on my program and remember me talking to you about a lady named Ann Barnhart.
Love her.
Okay, and that is exactly what Ann Barnhart meant when she told the story about Peter escaping, or Paul escaping Rome and going back. Said, I'm going back to Rome to be crucified. That's what they're talking about. They'll just shoot you if you resist. Hey, they put Christ on the cross for the same reason. Because he was a threat to their hegemony.
Agenda.
To their theocracy that they had created for themselves by twisting and bending the word of God. And you see, people believe that, oh my God, they believe that Christianity and the Bible and the word of God is used just like Islam and the Quran to subdue men to their will. And it was, but it was done wrongfully, and that was why the destruction of Israel came about in 70 AD as the final judgment against that form of government.
Right.
My
I know.
God, why can't people see this?
I know. Believe me, what I go through here in California, it would make your head spin. You think you're frustrated now? Wait till you hear my show. Oh, my God. It's crazy.
Robert had a point he was wanting to make, and I kept cutting him off.
No, I saw that on Fox News. It happened on Fox News today where a guy was trying to speak his mind, and security
That's the one in Baltimore, yeah. And it's all against this Common Core. And you know what
they
were doing?
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
I saw this very same thing happen at my county convention for the Republican Party in the run-up to the election. I was present when they escorted a guy out in the hallway because they didn't like the questions he was raising.
That's correct.
When the former chairman, okay, and I went through this, I explained it when it happened. We had 195 people present at this meeting. Out of that 195, 90 of us were Ron Paul supporters. The remaining 105 people were split between Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum and Romney and Herman Cain.
Guess who had
a majority? We did. Ron Paul supporters had a majority at that meeting, and it scared the crap out of them. So they had changed the rules prior to the meeting. The election cycle before in 2008, you had to be in attendance at your precinct mass meeting and at the county meeting convention in order to be appointed as a delegate to either the state or the national convention. Those were the rules. Now here we are, 2012, and the rule is anybody can be appointed as a delegate and they don't even have to be present. Now the way the way it was worded was they may be appointed as a delegate even if they're not present. We had 315 slots that we could fill for delegates.
Right.
We had 195 people present. Our contention was we have no problem including people on the list of delegates that aren't here. That's not our argument. Our argument is that every person here who wants to be a delegate should be placed as a delegate.
Mm-hmm.
There will still be slots available for those that aren't here. But in this way, everyone that did bother to show up to the mass meeting at their precinct and did bother to show up today because they wanted to be a delegate will become a delegate. It's that simple.
Right.
That's not at all what they wanted.
Of course not.
They didn't want no part of that. And so the fight ensued.
Sure. Uh-oh, did we lose you? No, you're there. Okay.
No, I'm still here. And the old chairman, the old county GOP chairman, got up on the stage, took the podium, took the microphone. We were still discussing it, and he turned and told one guy to shut your damn mouth and sit down. We said, whoa, 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 what happened to decorum? We're all supposed to be on the same team here, guys.
Wow.
Okay? So we're not even talking about what should not be an adversarial process here. We're all under the umbrella of the GOP, the Republican Party, and you're trying to divide us right here at the county level. And it wasn't just our county that this occurred in. This was around the United States. And we saw the culmination of that at the national convention, didn't we?
Absolutely. That's when Mikey B. lost it. He went nuts.
And it was not just the Ron Paul supporters that got disenfranchised. It was everybody that wasn't smooching the Romney butt train.
Oh, Lord.
Okay?
Well, you know.
So when you see this guy up in Baltimore getting shoved through the door, well, of course he's an enemy because he's standing up to the agenda.
You know, that meeting, this was a Board of Supervisors, school board, whatever.
It was a school board meeting about Common Core.
Yeah, it was about Common Core. Now, check this out. I have been to many, you know about the RAND Corporation and the Delphi Techniques. Okay. I have been to many Delphi Technique meetings in our fighting against ICLEI and the general plans and all this crap with Agenda 21. Well, what that meeting looked like to me, if that wasn't Delphi, I don't know what the hell you call it. And this is the same method they have been using with A21. This is the same method they're using with Common Core. That's how I tie it together. And I'll bet you it's all part of this New World Order. I mean, it's pretty clear to me. I'm not a genius, but I'm, you know.
No, but I learned a long time ago that the last thing, I mean, there's one thing that they absolutely despise, and that is vocal dissent.
Yep.
When they hauled my butt into a courtroom, okay, after, you know, they'd played some shenanigans, long story, and I don't want to get into the whole sordid thing, but suffice it to say, they held a session of the court an hour early, so it was just me and them.
Oh, wow.
Court convened at 10 o'clock, and I was there at 9 a.m. as ordered. And even then, when I walked into the courtroom, I see the judge, the prosecutor, the prosecutor's assistant, two deputies, three marshals, two guys in the back of the room in black suits, and me. Judge says, Mr. Golden, have a seat. It's good to see you here. Have a seat. We got some papers for you to sign. They slid some papers in front of me. I looked at them, read what it said, put my mark on there, made my comment underneath it, slid it back. The judge said, all right, Mr. Golden, you're free to go, and you have a better day. There was no conversation allowed, even though it was an empty courtroom. They do not want vocal dissent in any form.
Oh, I know.
At any level.
This is what's going on, and here's the thing. I think the wheels are coming off, and people are absolutely just fed up with it. Glenn talked about this Baltimore thing today with many people, and there was an attorney who also is a book writer, and he's fighting for freedom, and he says, I'll take that guy's case any day of the week, to help him, because I don't even can they charge him with? Freedom of speech? My God.
But I mean, my God, look, this is such a minor incident in comparison.
It still stinks.
There's a family in Arizona that no longer has a father because the cop shot him to death.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, this goes on all the time. I hear this all the time.
Marine, you know who I'm talking about?
No.
Yeah, the guy was fresh out of the Marine Corps. He's in bed. He hears a bunch of racket, gets out of the bed, grabs his AR-15. He hears bombs going off in his backyard, which are stun grenades or concussion grenades.
Oh, my gosh.
They're pounding on his front door. They bust the door open. 78 rounds later, he's laying in the hallway fighting for his life. His gun was still on safe. They wouldn't let the EMTs in to see him for an hour and 14 minutes. He expired. His wife is screaming and pleading with them.
Oh, my God.
He had no idea there were cops out there. He's got a wife and child in there that he's trying to protect, and they just run roughshod over people. This is your government. This
That's
is the mentality.
On.
They're militarizing your police, and this is not the only instance of this. This is just one case that comes to mind that's
one
most
case.
Recent.
Right.
Okay? At least the guy in Baltimore just got shoved through the door and harassed
and got put in jail. Yeah.
Right? And see, this is the deal. We're supposed to be afraid. You're supposed
That's
to submit.
What they want.
Just what Doc said.
You know what?
Submit or die.
Yep.
And gee, I happen to know a religion out there that says the same thing.
Islam. Well,
but
this
let me
is
tell you,
Glenn
we have stirred your government. I'm telling you right now, and I know people don't like to hear this, but your government, in your name, for whatever reason, has been fostering this Islamic ideology since the end of World War II. They created this. They nurture it.
Yep.
And now it's become a balkanization where you have got fanatic Christians balkanized against fanatic Muslims. Now, I can disagree with the tenets of Islam. Without wanting to pick up a sword and follow me out to kill them.
Yeah.
Okay? And you remember when the Ground Zero Mosque was, everyone was all a-Twitter over the Ground Zero Mosque. And I warned back then, I said, guys, be careful of what you're doing. Because what you ended up with, and this is just a perfect example of how well this balkanization has worked.
Work.
You had Christians screaming at the top of their lungs, asking their government to deny these Muslims their constitutional right under the First Amendment of the Constitution. Boys and girls, I'm here to tell you that if you accede to that ideology to deny a perceived threat of Islam, then that very same precept will be used against you to deny Christianity. It's just like the thing I've talked about with the border fence. Be careful what you ask
for. You wish for. Absolutely. Oh, my gosh.
Because a fence to keep others out can be a fence to keep you in.
Oh, I do think Ron Paul said that on stage one day. I remember hearing
it. I want to suggest a book for everyone to read. And it's called Devil's Game. Devil's Game, and the author is Robert Dreyfus.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And Mr. Dreyfus goes through making the case using past information, making the case that our government, the United States of America, is responsible for the creation and the rise and the continuation of, to this day, the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, the Mujahideen, Al-Qaeda, and damn near every other terrorist group or front group that you can name today. Not that we went over and fostered this and, you know, took these little children out of school and raised them up to be terrorists. No. But that through our actions and a lot of covert programs and actions, we have poured gasoline on the fire that was otherwise just a few small little groups like, I don't know, Westboro Baptist comes to mind.
Yeah.
And you see, every time we go and we kill a group of terrorists and, you know, a few women and children along with them, it has the effect of creating for this terrorist group ideology more recruits. This is what they call blowback and unintended consequences. You see, I think we foolishly had this completely ignorant view of Arabs and Islam and their societal and political structure. We didn't understand it. But we knew we could use it to our advantage to fight the evil scourge of communism. And it was real easy using religion to stir these people into a fervor to fight our enemy. The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah,
until
not.
They turn around and bite you on the ass.
Yep. Precisely.
So, Ron.
Yes, Robert.
If I wrote a letter to the editor of the New York Times, then you know, I could possibly be killed by October, right?
Absolutely.
I did. I wrote a letter to the New York Times. You want to hear it?
I hope you signed it, Vladimir Putin. You got a damn good chance of it published.
I wrote it because of Putin. You know, this is what I said to the editor. I said, "Dear editor, I said, I, as a citizen of the United States of America, would like to respond to President Putin's remarks regarding America as not an exceptional nation. When I heard his remarks, I was astonished, and his remarks left a sour taste in my mouth. I am proud to be an American because our Constitution of the United States gave Americans freedom, which we are fighting to keep as of today. It is a crying shame that Americans have to fight for freedom for their health care. It is a crying shame that Americans have to fight to keep the right to have arms. It is a crying shame that Americans have to fight to pay for abortions that they're not responsible for. These are the reasons why right now we are not exceptional. But as long as Americans follow the Constitution will speak for itself. And the Constitution is exceptional for Americans to fight for their freedoms. It is a crying shame that we're the richest nation on this earth, but Americans cannot afford to live in America. These are the reasons why Americans are crying for leadership. And now that Putin has control over the Middle East, our freedoms and liberties are slipping away from all Americans. The blood must stop. There must be peace all over this earth, and in order to have peace, we all must get along. enough of fighting and hatred towards one another, because America is an exceptional nation when we can work together to fix what is wrong with America and other nations that hate us and do not respect America anymore. That is why America is exceptional. I hope this letter will bring closure to the dangerous times we are all being witness to, and may God please bless America and the whole world. Respectfully, me.
Well, that's
not
awesome,
bad.
Robert.
Good for
I don't
you.
Know,
I, had
a you know, I wrote I had a little blog on Patriot Families just on that point, American exceptionalism. What is it and what isn't it? And what it isn't, what American exceptionalism is not, is the arrogant bullshit that they try to pass it off as today. Or exceptionalism, something that is exceptional is something that's unique and different.
Right.
And what made America exceptional was the very documentation, the idea, the ideals, the principles upon which it was founded. Those very same principles that I was speaking of at the beginning of the show.
Yep, in the Bible.
That is the principle that man is not fit to govern other men, and he's barely fit to govern himself. But as long as man has God as his guide and seeks to govern himself without trespassing on the rights and property
of the
neighbor.
Right.
Then our government will work as it's intended. What we have become is not exceptional. It's mundane, routine, and has been repeated throughout history time and again.
And it's sad, yes.
America remains to this day under the moniker of American exceptionalism is because as long as there's at least one person left alive,
mm-hmm.
that understands and is willing to fight and die for the idea, the concept.
Idea. Yes.
That is indoctrinated in that paperwork.
Enshrined.
Well, there's still a chance
for
American exceptionalism.
Did y'all hear about that student in California that got denied for passing out the Constitution of the United States?
Yep.
He got...
Yeah, because he's on campus. The whole thing is sick. I'm done. This state's dead to me. It really is.
That really pissed me off, Linda. I thought about you while we get.
what you're talking about, Ron, when you're talking about the beam in the eye and the speck and all these things, and you're dealing with minding your own business and not worrying about what your neighbor's doing, that's very, very true. As long as, like Jefferson says, don't pick my pocket and don't break my arm. As long as that neighbor is not injuring you, you got no problem with them. They can
exactly.
smoke pot all day long. Right.
Exactly.
But
in the law, that injury is known as a trespass. Okay?
Correct.
And, let's go back to that Lord's Prayer. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Yeah.
Thy will be done. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Wow, does that not sum up the whole concept that you find in our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution?
Now, while you're forgiving them, don't you get compensated for something if they did break your arm or do something horrible?
Yes, in the Bible there is the concept of treble damages or three times the damages.
Okay.
That's the law of recompense or compensation. And it's just. Okay?
Okay.
The idea is that the idea of self and your own self-interests, pursue them to the highest heights, but never, ever allow your own pursuit of your own self-interest to encroach upon or trespass upon another.
Right.
Because that's where you cross the line. And if we would just adhere to that,
Oh, I know.
I think Ron Paul summed it up just by saying the golden rule, do unto others.
Yep, sure. It
and
works.
And,
it absolutely works.
That's the thing that kills me. Why is it okay to apply do unto others within the continental United States, but when it comes to those crazy camel jockeys or the, you know, the sand fleas or the Asians or the South Americans, well, don't worry about that. Kill them if you want to. We don't care. Just do unto others right here because we're Americans. Now, that's
well,
wrong.
You know,
it has to be
right.
For
of course it is. Look, we've gone through this before. I mean, there were several people, not just Washington and Jefferson, I'm sure many of them didn't want foreign entanglements. They wouldn't want to bomb people unless it was, my God, absolutely necessary to preserve the sovereignty.
You know
well,
why that is?
Common sense.
Well, sure, it's common sense because let's look at history. And what happens in history when man gets power and authority of life and death over another?
Yep.
The very first instance, okay, is always going to be some outside enemy, some outside threat.
Right.
Some foreigner, someone that's not from your tribe, okay? Because it's easy to hate someone you have no connection to
sure.
other than you're a human being. And it's easy to dehumanize them. But what does that always descend into? The scope of what falls under the meaning of enemy gets broader and broader and broader.
Right. Right.
Until
and then you have,
my dear fellow citizen, are that enemy.
Well, sure. Then it just becomes a free-for-all holocaust because that's what it'll evolve into.
Anybody that isn't government is an enemy of government. That's exactly what it devolves into. And the government ultimately fails because it can't find enough people to help fight all those nasty enemies. And it falls apart.
Yeah,
Monetary policy plays a part in that because it just gets spread too thin. But it's the same concept, and it's been repeated hundreds of times.
You know, it's funny because everything I know you were talking on Mikey's show, it was like before I got to be into the conversation, it was amazing what the Congress shall have the power to borrow money, coin money and all these things. And you talked about the dollar. I think it was, I forget how they spell it, but. And the
T-H-A-L-L-E-R.
Yeah.
Power.
The pieces of eight and all those. I mean, the very next day, I picked up my book, and that's the chapter that G. Edward Griffin was talking about. It was absolutely godsend. I love it. I was like, woo! Yeah, it was almost word for word. I'm like, oh, wow, I heard this Saturday. It was absolutely phenomenal. So I can get a lot from this book.
I cannot take credit for that because I have been given a gift and I retain about 98% of what I read. So I'm not surprised that it was almost word for word because that's one of many places where I've read that story. Creature from Jekyll Island, Edwin Vieira in Pieces of Eight, which is his two-volume work. It's gigantic.
Right.
And a plethora of other places that I've read that story and where the money came from. And, you know, it goes back to those idiotic little sayings that we never knew. 2 bits, 4 bits, 6 bits, a dollar, you know.
My dad used to say it.
Right,
yep,
but
my dad
there's
used
no
to say
connection.
It.
And your dad probably didn't know the connection. You know?
He did because he was a math whiz. He did.
Well,
he
sure. I mean,
20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he may not have understood that it was a colonial.
Yeah, I'm sure not. Yeah, he probably tied it to the real, the normal dollar of today. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's getting back to that root understanding of where that saying comes from.
Exactly. And the honest weights and measures, I mean, this is something that's what Griffin does. He's so good at it because he just lays it out. And he lays it out thick, let me tell you. He just, he actually has suggestions where we can actually take, he says, copy these pages, send them to your congressman, send a cover letter, and say, we need to get back to this, guys.
Yep.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
And I guarantee you,
permission.
I can guarantee you, if you were to ask Mr. Griffin, he would tell you the same thing I told you, that, you know, these ideas didn't spring forth from his mind.
No.
These are things that he's come to understand by reading the handing down of or passing down of information, verbally or orally written, from one generation to another, and research and finding this is true.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and I mean, it's thank God that we have stalwarts like G. Edward Griffin and, you know, Edwin Vieira and others before them.
Oh, and we
have
people
foundational knowledge that they were operating on. You know, they didn't.
Right.
Many of the, you go back to the founders, and you know they're reading things like de Tocqueville and John Locke and you know
Montesquieu.
Basquiat, right? Okay, well, where do you think Basquiat and these guys got these ideas? From history, the example of history. My God, they read and they saw
what many
others didn't see. Okay, but they did copious amounts of reading and research.
Oh, my
gosh. It's the same thing, and it's just passing along what ought to be patently obvious. It ought to be so damned obvious as the nose on your face, but it's not because this alternative history – this revisionist ideologies gets thrust upon us, and you know we have to do our own due diligence. I think that's why the internet has been a tremendous thing.
Fabulous. And I do know that everybody, including Ben Franklin, used to say many times. I know Washington said it, that this particular form of government is going to work only with a well-informed and moral body politic. And they were correct. And so, you know, the other thing is I thank God for people like Griffin and the others and Basquiat that I can actually get my hands on them too. I can get my hands on Eric Metaxas going in depth about Bonhoeffer and what happened. Amazing stuff. I mean, and just a plethora of fabulous authors who have done their due diligence because they're historians, they are passionate, they want to know the truth, and they want to get it to us. And it's amazing. And I've been blessed that I have the good authors here.
As I've gone and read some, and I'm not like huge, widely read, but I've read enough. You know, I still want to read more, and I try to read every day. But as I've read through some of the philosophers, when you go through a Hegel and many of others, and, you know, when I run across this idea, and it's a which came first, the chicken or the egg question. And that is, does morality breed freedom, or does freedom breed morality? And I believe that it is freedom that breeds morality. As people are more free, they tend to be more responsible because the law is kind of unforgiving, and it holds you responsible.
Because you can still have moral principles in your heart and be under Stalin's thumb at the same time. So
correct.
You're probably right. Yeah.
As we see freedom diminish, morality diminishes with it exponentially.
Right, right.
It's cause and effect. How can we say that? Well, as you remove freedom, you also remove responsibilities. And as the barrier of moral responsibility is removed, morality naturally tends downward. I think it's a very astute observation by the philosopher, whose name escapes me at the moment, but he had it right. I think morality follows freedom, or the lack thereof.
Right, because that happened, people were probably very discouraged and depressed in the 20s, in that period of Germany when they had the Weimar, and then they had the cabaret and all kinds of wantonness and, you know, debauchery was going on as well. So, yeah, I mean, and I think even though there was freedom in the Roaring 20s here, I don't know what was going on.
Well, wait a minute now. Let's look at that. I knew you might bring that up, but let's look at the Roaring 20s, and let's talk about what freedom was there and what freedom left. And what responsibilities left. The Roaring 20s, I believe, was a direct result of two things. One was had the appearance of freedom on the surface, but it was actually the lack of freedom, and that was the monetary system that had been created, and all this free money that gave rise to the boom of the 20s. And there was something else that happened. They had a constitutional amendment to prohibit alcohol.
Oh, absolutely. So that was a squash on freedom.
So what
yeah.
happened? You lost the freedom of the power of money, and you were stuck with a legal tender currency in its place.
Right.
And
right.
they told you that you couldn't consume alcohol. What happened to morality in the 20s? It took a freaking nosedive.
Yep. Chicks had short skirts and cut their hair and went bonkers. Started smoking.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah, the flappers, seriously.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
it did.
If you know the troubles and the signs and you can look at it a little more pragmatically, it becomes really painfully obvious.
Yeah. It's amazing. Well, they were doing the same thing in Germany.
Precisely.
With the Weimar, you guys can rent that movie Cabaret. I mean, not that anyone, I know you're a guy, so you don't like show tunes, but just for the historical, you know, perspective of how debaucherous they were. I mean, it was amazing. They had a blast, but yeah, the cabarets
sure.
were a big business.
I mean,
yeah.
hell, when you got nothing else to live for, just, you know, throw caution to the wind and let's go.
Yeah.
No, screw
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Tomorrow
hey,
will take care
the
of
truth.
Itself. But that, I mean,
they have nothing to live for.
And, you know, you look at what's going on today, and, you know, these people, and I talked about this the other night, with all of these government, you know, endowment programs that endow people with money and food that doesn't belong to them and they didn't rightfully earn. And I know how terrible that must sound because we have, you know, what, 47 million plus people on government assistance. Well, let's go back to the days when these programs first were contemplated. Let's go back to the days of the Great
right.
Depression, and people were suffering, absolutely. Now, I'm not going to begrudge Mr. FDR for the make-work programs like the Tennessee Valley Authority, you know, Eisenhower and the interstates. Now, that may be a bit of an overreach constitutionally, but
mm-hmm.
I can go along with that because it did put people back to work, and it was doing things, building things that we could use, infrastructure that was useful, and it
right.
was useful by everybody in the country. So
right.
while I still think there's some philosophical issues there, you know, for the most part, I'm willing to kind of turn a semi-blind eye to that. But let's look at the Social Security program that was started.
Oh, God.
I look at that time frame in our life, in our country,
mm-hmm.
and I think not what happened, but my God, what could have been if we had
right.
not instituted this program? What could have been? Because we know one of the old sayings certainly still holds true to this day, and that is that necessity is the mother of all invention. And had
right.
those people not been taken in and coddled by
sure.
the government,
right?
What
Ponzi
may
scheme.
What great things might have arisen out of that necessity? We'll never know. We will never know. And
well, the other
and when we look
the
at
other
go ahead.
The other consequence of that, when you talk about that, how they tacked it on. Those Social Security numbers, which is like the ancient version of the RFID chip, basically, because they've got
sure.
you by the, you know what, I'm sick of it. Now they can, it is such a, this is in the Matrix. I mean, this is the Minority Report on steroids. I can't take
you do,
anymore.
You do realize, though. you do realize, and I hope everyone out there listening to the sound of my voice realizes that Social Security, just like every one of these programs, is voluntary. It requires your consent
right.
to it.
Hey,
when
guys.
You
turn,
I'm not going to tell
wait,
you that.
Hold on. When you turn 18, oh, it's in the law. When you turn 18, you have, within 6 months of your 18th birthday, to send them back their Social Security card and tell them, no thanks, don't want it, don't need it. Take me
wow.
off your list.
Well, I heard they're doing it at birth now. They're
well,
making the kids
they,
get it.
You see, they try to do that, but they cannot force you to do so. And I have a friend who has a little girl who's not quite two, and she has no Social Security number. Now, I've heard other people say, well, you can't get a job without one. Oh, no, that's not true either. And I forget the exact case, but there was a young man that went to work for, of all companies, Taco Bell. And he told them, I don't have a Social Security number. And they said, that's not a problem. Now, he was working for their HR department doing computer programming. And HR got in touch with him and said, oh, we need your Social Security number. He said, I told you when you hired me that I don't have one. It's against my religious convictions.
Wow.
To have a Social Security number.
It's
and they said, oh, well, we're going to have to terminate your employment. And they did. And guess who came stepping up to take on his lawsuit? Oh, you know, those folks that everybody likes to denigrate.
The ACLU?
Yes, ma'am.
American Civil Liberties. Oh, wow.
ACLU stepped up to the plate. And they sued Taco Bell Incorporated, I forget the name of the Yum Foods, Yum Brands or whatever it was, for a violation of his religious freedoms. And he won his lawsuit.
That's bitchin'. Yeah, that's great. Wow.
The law or the code, the statutes are very clear. It says that a payer or employer must ask for your Social Security number.
They can't just demand it, yeah.
No, it says they have to ask. Doesn't say
they have
to get it. They have to ask.
Wow. That's a great story.
They cannot force you to take a number and take part in a government benefits program as a condition of employment. That's called slavery, boys and girls.
Oh, my God. It has been from its inception, and I hate it. And the evil Federal Reserve Act and the whole, I hate it.
Yes, they still can withhold, but here's the problem they have. If you don't have a Social Security number, they don't know how to process you. Then they'll tell you that you have to have a taxpayer identification number. What do you think, guys, you know, everybody's got their panties in a wad over illegal immigration. You don't have any idea what you've done. Because now you got to fill out the I-9 form and all this other crap.
Right.
Okay? And, you know, it's just really sad because we're truly our own worst enemy. Because if you don't have a Social Security number, they don't know how to withhold income taxes from you. And your state doesn't even know that you exist at all because you're not in the system.
System, I know. No.
I actually had, hang on, Doc was talking about having jury duty. One of my guys got a notice for jury duty, and it says on the form, if you are not a citizen of the United States, provide proof that you are not a citizen.
Oh, my Lord.
How in the hell does one go about proving that you're not a citizen?
Oh, my God.
A great card.
Not prove that you are a citizen. Prove that you are not.
Wow.
A green card.
Jeez.
Well, what I want to tell you guys, I want you guys to go see the movie The Butler. You have to go see it.
I'm not wasting my money.
On that film if it was on fire.
I wouldn't support that evil, either one of those evil people.
I didn't want to go, but I bit the dust and I went, but I'm telling you, it is.
No, I don't like Oprah, and I can't stand Jane Fonda, the traitor. I also think that Oprah is a traitor. I
can't
stand him.
I'm not
paying money. I refuse.
I can't
stand. And it's probably a pack of lies anyway, or twisted.
No.
No, but it was a great, it was a sad story. It was very
sad. I'm glad
sad.
You enjoyed it. I'm not going.
Don't even, yeah, you can forget about it. I wouldn't walk across the street to see Oprah. I don't care if
oh,
she
no.
was on fire in the movie.
I can't stand her.
Wouldn't do it.
Can't stand that woman.
Oh, my
she
Lord.
Hanoi Jane are traitors. I won't give them one thing. If they paid me $1,000, I wouldn't go see it.
You know, Robert, when I see her, okay, there's a joke that comes to mind about a horrible hurricane down in Florida and mass flooding. And there's a photographer there, and he hears a faint cry for help, and he looks out, and my God, it's Hillary Clinton just narrowly clasping to a board, and she's slipping and getting ready to go under. And he looks at his camera, and he looks back at her, and he's only got a few seconds to decide. And he turns to his buddy, and he says, "Do you think I ought to use color or black and white?"
That's funny. That's a
yep.
funny joke.
Now, I won't
that's a
ask
good one, brother.
I would ask you, you know, if you know the difference between Santa Claus and a Jew, but that's probably pretty horrible.
I can tell you a story about
well, hang on. Do you know the difference?
Let's say that again.
I don't.
Between Santa Claus and a Jew.
What's the difference?
Santa Claus goes down the chimney.
What a bastard. That's
I'm
pretty
sorry.
Funny.
Come on.
Oh, God. Hey, Rod, it's like two black models are having a photo shoot, right?
Right.
And the photographer goes to black models and say, "Focus. Now you got to focus. You got to keep on focus. And the two black models says, "You mean both us?
That's cute. That's really good.
That's a
cute.
Did you hear me?
I do apologize, Robert. You know, I cannot help myself with these terrible jokes.
So I'm going to let you wrap.
No, my father told me that joke, and I swear to God, my father, when he told me that joke, I said, "Dad, that's a bad joke." You know that, but actually, it's pretty funny. It's the truth.
Well, you know, if we can't laugh at ourselves or others, you know, that aren't suffering today, but maybe the suffering of others in the past, I guess, you know. That's why I told Yola today that I saw a picture of, and I probably shouldn't even say this, I saw a picture of Jerry Sandusky online, and it said, "Never won a football game." And then down at the bottom it said he was always coming in a little behind.
Oh. Did
okay,
I have
God
one more joke?
Guys, I'm going to go back
Ron,
to the chat room. Thanks, Ron.
I have one more
thanks,
joke.
Thanks, Robert.
All right,
Linda,
Robert,
hang on.
Go ahead.
Did you hear about the old Jewish couple that was sick and tired of the whole thing?
No.
He was sick and tired of the whole, she was sick and tired of the thing.
Yeah, that's like that question, why are Jewish divorces so expensive? Because they're worth it?
Oh my God! I have to go do another routine at the comedy shop.
Absolutely. Now you got that's a good one, right?
I'm still not over this damn stuff that I have, but I put a lot of time and effort in that letter, and the more I think about it. You know what? If they come after me, they come after me. I don't care at this point in time. I just had to get it off my chest.
Well, they're coming after all of us in one way or another, one way, shape, or form.
I know. I hate to see what's going to happen on October 1st, my birthday. I'll be 58. And
October
I don't know what's going to happen.
Is going to be an interesting, you know, I think October's going to be pretty interesting. September's been a pretty good shakeup going on, and
No, you know, Ron, there's a question. Yeah, I know. But it's terrible what happened in Kenya, you know? You know, then they have these Americans that are fighting for Al-Qaeda. Is that what did I hear right? Did I hear right?
Well, of course, you know, remember, you know, what I said earlier, there's a term for this. It's called Balkanization, or, you know, in the words of Shin Tzu, divide and conquer. And it's working pretty damn good so far.
Wow. I mean, that's just like unbelievable. I mean, the malls, and now we got to worry about going in the mall to get a braids blown out. All right.
Well, and you know what? And they wonder why I want to conceal carry.
I don't blame you.
We sit on this forum, on this gun forum, and these guys all talk about, you know, their carry permits and stuff, and I just laugh because every time I type something in, it has a signature line that says, "Free men do not ask for permission to keep and bear arms."
Wow.
You think about that. If you've got to ask permission to keep and bear arms for your own self-defense, you're not a free man. I'm sorry. You're not.
You're not. That's the whole point. I mean, I never felt I was free when I was born, so it doesn't matter. I mean, I had to obey my mother and father. I have to obey.
There's a difference between, you know, obeying mother and father and freedom. This freedom is something that I think as a child is earned into adulthood. Within reasonable restraints or constraints, I think. But, you know, we're not competent to make those decisions on our own as a child. And it is that mentoring, it's that education, the wisdom and knowledge, right, that we gain from our parents. But what wisdom and knowledge do you gain towards freedom from your parents if your parents have lived their entire lives as slaves and yet believe they have freedom?
My father and mother were never free. They worked their asses off. They were never free, Ron. My mother and father worked their asses off for the community, and you know, we never saw our parents when I was a kid. But they were never free. They busted their ass. You know,
well, Robert,
maybe once a year we go on vacation, but you know, they were never free either.
I have like 30 seconds left. I want to say thank you for calling in. God bless you for tolerating me and my horrible Jewish jokes. And you know I love you, brother.
Oh shoot, Ron, this is all water over the dam. The only thing I could be guilty of is being a Jew.
God bless you, Robert.
God bless
everybody out there listening. Thank you guys all for tuning in. Doc, Bill, FT, Linda, Lonnie, Yola, Nick listening in the background, Chad, everybody, thank you. God bless you, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
Later.
Bye-bye.